That's Kay's Melody, the theme of one of the outstanding sweet bands of all time, a theme familiar to radio listeners of the program Sunday Serenade. This is Arnold Dean, and our special in-person guest today is Sammy Kay. This is the music of Sammy Kay on a one-night stand with the big bands.
Very much I miss you. In these words by Tony Alamo. I miss you since you went away, dear. Miss you and say, dear, daytime, nighttime, nothing I do can make me forget that I stay.
Sammy Kay and the orchestra always made it easy on the disc jockeys. They took care of most of the introductions on their own, and that was certainly one of their big records, and you'll hear a few more. We interviewed Sammy Kay on the fly, really, at his Manhattan office. He not only was ready to talk with us and happy to build this show, but also seemed delighted at the fact that we were interested in building a one-night stand around the music and the conversation of Sammy Kay. Now, Sammy Kay, in a rare burst of logic, let me begin right at the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in a town called Lakewood, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland, directly west of Cleveland. And then I moved to Rocky River, Ohio, which we publicized quite often on our radio and television shows because nobody ever heard of Rocky River. It's actually also a suburb of Cleveland, but it's a nice-sounding town.
Did you begin on clarinet?
No, actually, banjo was my original instrument.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I went to Ohio University, well, at high school, we used to have a little band we got together, you know, and I played banjo in that band. And then when I went to Ohio University, I had the banjo along. That's actually, it was the start of the Swing and Sway Band in its infancy at that time. See, the first band was only about three pieces, Sammy's Hot Peppers. there's a name for you. And we had, I guess, three pieces. We played fraternity and sorority dances and things like that. And then there was a place called the Varsity Inn at Ohio that we started playing in, and there, that's where we expanded the band. And when we got that large, I had to stand in front of the band, and the banjo became unwieldy, so I picked up the clarinet and started playing that.
Oh, good heavens. Did you take any formal training in it?
I took some lessons, but very few. I never professed to try to be Benny Goodman or an Artie Shaw.
You say, Sammy, this was the start of your actual swing and sway band. How did you come up with the swing and sway nickname?
Well, that happened quite a while after we left school. We sort of barnstormed around Arnold, and things went from bad to worse and so forth. Also, another thing that is interesting at that time, Blue Baron, you might remember his name.
Oh, yes.
He went to school with me. His name was Harry Friedland, and he was my manager for a while when we left school. But things went so bad that Harry gave up and went back to Cleveland. He was also from Cleveland, and so I continued. And then when we started broadcasting in Cleveland, Ohio, at a place called the Cabin Club, we used to rhyme things with my name, having the announcer say, music in a rhythmic way played for you by Sammy Kay, or music in a sentimental way played for you by Sammy Kay. And then one of the things I threw in there was, now we continue to swing and sway with Sammy Kay, see? So we really didn't plan on using this until some kids came in and said, hi, Swing and Sway, called me by that name. And right then my ears perked up and I said, oh, that's great.
That's it.
Forget everything else from then on. It was all, and now we continue to swing and sway with Sammy Kay.
How large was that band? I see 10 plus.
We had three brass, and we came with that size band to the Commodore Hotel eventually when we first came to New York. Three brass, and at school we had three saxes, but then we enlarged it to four saxes, and we had four rhythm.
Was that also a sweet band?
Oh, yes. It was my feeling that a band, when we broadcasted, should have a style that if anybody turned into the program halfway through or in the middle of a song, in just a little while, they would recognize whose band it was.
They call them Sweet or Mickey Mouse bands. Now, you've heard the term, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Have you ever resented the terminology Mickey Mouse?
No, I never resented it at all. Those that used it were people like George Simon. And I don't resent George Simon. He's a very good friend of mine.
George, as a matter of fact, has even said he's not sure what the terminology means, except that it means a band that is not a jazz type band.
That is correct, yeah. Uh-huh.
Did you do many of your own arrangements, Sammy?
Yes, I did. In the early days, I did a lot of the arranging.
Sammy, I'm going to take a guess at about 1937 for this one. And I'm quite sure that this is one of your early arranging efforts, too. It was done on the Vocalion label. It's an old 78. We went through our WTIC record file of the old 78s, and this is the oldest one we could find. I think you'll enjoy hearing it again, and so will your fans. Here is Good Morning.
Good morning, good morning. Let the merry sun shine. shining. Wake up and greet it with a big broad grin that says good morning, good morning. Another fair day is dawning. So let your spirits boom and zoom, and gloom will never horn in. For a happy, cheery, bright good morning will last you all the day long.
Oldest Sammy K78 from the TIC library. That was Good Morning. Sammy, as nearly as I can determine, your band first came to national prominence around 1937.
That is right.
What brought you to the national limelight?
Well, there were a couple of things that were fortunate for us. We were playing at the place called Willoway Country Club in Cleveland, and they had a radio strike here in New York, you see. And they couldn't feed any music out of New York City. I don't know what happened, but we were there. And we would be on the air three times a night from the Willoway Country Club to fill in all this time that they needed from other cities throughout the country, you see. And then we went to a place called Bill Green's Casino. And there we started doing a broadcast. We not only broadcast it at night, but we broadcast it in the afternoon. Around, I would say, 4 o'clock, something like that. And also, I made a deal with the Mutual Network at that time. They were the ones that were picking us up. That any time that they had a half hour and they needed us, why, we were available. We never went anyplace. We just stood by. We came there at noon sometimes in our pajamas. They'd call me up and say, can you be on at 12:30? I said, sure.
Oh, what a wise move that was.
And everybody would come over there, and we'd go on the air, and there'd be nobody in the place, you know, just us, but... We just broadcast at any time that they wanted us.
And the broadcasts, of course, made the bands.
Well, that really did. And also, I just want to add one more note there, Arnold. When I first went to Bill Green's Casino in the summer before the fall, when we went back there to broadcast, we played there for a couple of weeks, and I like to play golf, and Bill Green, who owned the place, also liked to play golf, you see. So we started playing golf. He didn't particularly care about the band, but he liked me because I played golf. So he said, how about, you know, coming back for an engagement? I said, well, sure. I'd love it. He said, how soon can you come back? I didn't want to tell him that we didn't have a job. But I told him, well, you know, in a month or so, we can come back. He said, well, come back and play the winter, you know. And so we played golf every day, and we broadcasted. And we were there for 6 months, and this was really the turning point of the band, because after we left there, Arnold, we went to a place called Pottstown, Pennsylvania, the Sunnybrook Ballroom, and all the bands play there. And we came out of Bill Green's and went in there, and we were with MCA, but they didn't even know that we existed. And I think our guarantee was incidentally, my job at Bill Green's, I was getting $350 a week. This is in the 30s, you see. Of course, the Depression. This is for the whole band.
Oh.
For the whole band, mind you. So we went to Sunnybrook Ballroom and had a guarantee there of a couple of $100 for the night on a Saturday night. And Arnold, when we got through with that night, I had money coming out of all of my pockets because our 60% amounted to $1,800 for that night, you
wow.
see. And, of course, when I send my commission into MCA, they right away said, Sammy K, who's he? Where'd he come from, you know? They had never heard of me. And and they immediately contacted me or sent somebody out to find us, you know, and made plans then for us to play certain places to, as they would say, build a band up for coming to New York.
On the subject of broadcasts, your Sunday Serenade, I think, had the longest run of any band show for any band leader. It ran a good dozen years, I believe.
Yes, it did. Yes. The origin of that was when we came to the Commodore Hotel Going back to my college days again, I used to listen to a program called Moon River out of Cincinnati. Again, to go back to Cincinnati. And this fellow would read some poetry along with an organ, and I think a trio of girls sang or something like that. It was a very nice mood program. And I thought, gee, why don't we do a Sunday program and I'll read a poem? And then when I told my manager what I was going to do, he said, "You're crazy." He said, "You're nuts. What are you talking about, reading a reading a poem?" I said, "We got to do it, Jim." Jim Pepe was his name. I said, I think it's going to be a great mood program if we just play certain music and I'll read a poem, see? And sure enough, I don't know how we got the thing on the air. We got a sustaining thing, I think, and then it became commercial shortly after that with some very fine sponsors, Tangi and Richard Hudnut. And I started reading poetry. That's frightening, isn't it?
Sammy, Don Cornell had one huge hit with your band, It Isn't Fair. And I think Don is still very active. He bills himself on his personal appearances as Domenico Francesco Cornello. And he is quite active nowadays.
Yes. See, Don was a very fine fellow to work with, and we discussed his future a number of times while he was with the band, and it was I that came to him. And I said, "Don, we've made quite a few good records with you, and your name is well known now. Let's make one more date, and then why don't you go out on your own?" I suggested that he leave the band and go out as a single, and fortunately for both of us, the last recording date we made was It Isn't Fair. And that was a springboard for him to go out as a single.
Yes, that must have launched his career very nicely.
Yes.
Sing this beautiful song. Here is Don Cornell.
It isn't fair for you to taunt me. How can you make me care this way? It isn't fair for you to want me. If it's just for a day, it isn't fair for you to thrill me. Why do you do the things you do? It isn't fair for you to fill me with those dreams that can't come true, dear. Why is it you came into my life and made it complete? You gave me just a taste of high life. This is love, then I repeat. It isn't fair for you to taunt me. How can you make me care this way? It isn't fair for you to want me. If it's just for today, my darling.
Incidentally, it must have been difficult for Sammy Kaye to read that poetry with the whole band sitting in the same studio as they did their Sunday serenade broadcasts. And I do happen to know, Sammy, that the way you accomplished it without breaking up was to sit behind a screen. I know this from some of the fellows at WTIC. And incidentally, I bring you greetings from TIC and from everybody in Hartford. You originated your Sunday serenade so very frequently from our studios.
Yes, every time we were in Hartford, or in that area, we'd have to find some place to originate the Sunday program. And so we did broadcast out of TIC many, many times.
When did you first come up with the singing song titles?
That happened at Ohio University, Arnold. When we were at school, we used to copy records of the popular bands at that time and any popular arrangements that came out on record. And a band named Gus Arnheim and his Ace Band of Movie Land. Did you ever hear the band?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. He made a record of a song called, and the whole band sang it, "I'm Doing That Thing, Getting That Swing, Falling in Love." I can't tell you what the title is, but I remember that there would be a little, I think, instrumental introduction, then the whole band sang this, you see. And as we played this arrangement, I thought to myself, gee, if we ever broadcast, wouldn't it be a great idea to sing the title, you know, as he did on this record, and instead of just the announcer announcing it. So we did write a few arrangements then as we went along, and the whole band sang this thing. But what happened is that after 6 months, when we would pull out an arrangement that we hadn't played maybe recently, it became a little jargled, I would say, you know, the whole band trying to sing a title. So that's when I decided that perhaps it might be a better idea just to have one person sing it. Yeah. Let that be his job.
Picture vocally painted by the octet.
In your Easter bonnet, with all the frills upon it, you'll be the grandest lady in the Easter parade. I'll be all in clover, and when they look you over, I'll be the proudest fellow in the Easter parade.
On the avenue, Fifth Avenue,
the photographers will snap us, and you'll find that you're in the road of gravure. Oh, I could write a sonnet about your Easter bonnet and of the girl I'm taking to the Easter parade.
You know, so many columnists over the years tried to either promote or at least say that there existed a feud between you and Kay Kaiser about things like that, and perhaps you're adapting from his style or vice versa. How is your relationship with Kay Kaiser?
Fine. I never met Kay during our working times when we were active, but after Kay retired, I did run into him someplace. We were at some mutual party, and we had a very, very nice conversation about, you know, about the band business and so forth.
This is something that existed in a lot of columns, but not necessarily
right.
in the minds of either you or Kay Kaiser.
Exactly.
Then. Another thing that was extremely successful for you in broadcast and telecast was the series of So You Want to Lead a Band.
Oh, yeah.
How did this come about?
Well, So You Want to Lead a Band certainly was one of the luckiest things that we ever fell into. And it's an amazing thing how the same, for the same reason that I fell on it and decided to do it, every other band leader had the same opportunity to do So You Want to Lead a Band, because throughout the early days of my career, you know, when you're playing these places, somebody has one Coke or something too many, and right away they want to, you know, say, how about leading a number or something, you know? And I don't know why, I sort of thought about it and said, gee, it might be a good idea to reverse the process and invite them to come up, make a little contest out of it. Actually, what happened was at the Commodore Hotel, this fellow was there, a young fellow, and he had a very pretty girl. And he wanted to, for some reason, he said, gee, I'd sure like to lead the band once. I said, all right, you lead the band and I'll dance with your girl. Of course, I had an ulterior motive in my mind. I didn't care about him leading the band. So I'm dancing away with the girl, you know, and I'm saying, oh, how lovely you look, my dear, and all that stuff, and where can I call you? All she's doing is looking at her boyfriend and how well he's leading the band and all that. So the next night I thought, hey, if a guy, you know, would let me dance with this girl just so he could lead the band, I'll reverse the process and make a contest out of it. And it seemed natural that we should have two girls and two boys. And the Commodore Hotel said, okay, we'll give him a bottle of champagne to the winner. And I got some batons and gave each one a baton, and it was an instantaneous hit. Absolutely, just like that.
It was great entertainment.
Yeah, it was just amazing that everybody would like to take a whack at leading a band, you know?
The Sammy Kay Band, under the maestro's baton, also appeared in a couple of Hollywood extravaganzas, didn't it, Sammy?
Yes, we did one with Sonia Henie and John Payne in Iceland, and then with Edgar Bergen was in it, Jane Powell, Song of the Open Road.
Uh-huh.
Those are the two movies we made.
Did you enjoy the experience of Hollywood?
I did very much. As a matter of fact, when we first went out, Iceland was the first one, and that was at 20th Century Fox. Both Glenn Miller and Harry James were out there.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing, naturally, we were a pretty green bunch of guys. We didn't know what we were doing out there. And to loosen us up, we were all set to film our theme song, the start of this setting. We're playing in this place in Iceland. We're supposed to be in this hotel, and the first scene of the band is us starting with our theme song. So I'm all set, and we had recorded it, and then they have the clicks, you know, click, 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 start. You know, it was timed that way. So the clicks come on, and we start. Of course, we're not playing. They're just playing the film. They're playing the soundtrack back, and here comes Glenn Miller's theme song. Now, of course, this is my first movie. I don't know. Have they made a mistake, or do I keep going? I just kept going away until everybody broke up, and then all the tension let up a little bit.
Well, you had a veritable battalion of vocalists. I remember six at one time. I think you had George Brandon, Maury Cross, Marty McKinnon, Charlie Wilson, Arthur Wright, and the aforementioned Tommy Ryan, all with your band at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, did they all double, or did some of them double?
George Brandon and Charlie Wilson played saxophone.
Ah.
But at one time, I think we had three girls and three fellas on the bandstand. They just sang. I think we had Tony Alamo, and we had Don Cornell, Marty McKenna, and then we had Sally Stewart, I don't know, Betty Barclay, Mary Marlowe, I think, the three girls.
What was your first major hit record? Was it Daddy?
Daddy was the first one, yes.
What was the year on that?
41, I think.
And this is one which really didn't adhere to your style. There was no singing song title.
No.
It was really a departure for the band, and yet it caught on, instantly and became a tremendous smash hit.
As we went along, of course, we changed our style because I had a meeting with one of the top men at MCA, And he said, I think that you have pretty well saturated the country with your style. In other words, it's so stereotyped. You know, we play two bars, sing a title, and all the little gimmicks that we used. He said, you're absolutely right. I said, I've been waiting for somebody to notice this and to tell me that we might diversify. And so we went ahead and diversified. In many instances, just like in Daddy, dropped a singing song title and things of that nature.
La, 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 la.
Bobby Troup wrote Daddy, didn't he?
That is right.
Were you the first one to record it?
I also published it. I bought the rights to it.
Well, that didn't hurt, did it?
Or got the rights, yes. No, it certainly did not hurt. As a matter of fact, an interesting sideline to that story is that when Bobby wrote it for the Mask and Wig show at the University of Pennsylvania, he called it Daisy May. And it was, and the reason for that, because in the verse it says, here's a story about a gal, Lazy Daisy May,
yes.
Or something like that, see? And when I recorded it, or was going to, I said to Bobby, I said, would you mind if we change the title to Daddy? He said, no. He was a kid in school, and here's somebody recording his song. He said, no, let's call it Daddy. Sure. So we changed the title and called it Daddy.
Did you arrange that one, Sammy?
Yes.
You can take full credit for it. How many copies has it sold over the years?
Oh, I would say, see, we recorded originally on Victor. Then, we, of course, we recorded again on Columbia when I moved over to Columbia Records. I would say it's probably sold a couple of million between the two of them.
Now, you mentioned a couple other really big sellers. I guess your big three were Daddy and Harbor Lights and It Isn't Fair. Tell us more about Harbor Lights. How did that one come into existence? Did you spot that song
No.
and decide to put it in the book?
No, Mitch Miller was the A&R man at Columbia, and this was my first recording date for Columbia. And Mitch, I think, brought it to my attention, said, gee, this, this is about time that this song should be re-recorded again because it was a hit a number of years back. And so I studied the arrangement out and decided that we would go for a trio treatment, let mm-hmm. the trio sing it. My philosophy was that it's interesting to have the soloist, the boy lead, sing, and then have the girl carry the pure duet part, and then the third voice just to fill in the third mm-hmm. The third harmony. And we made the record, just used the, we didn't even use any brass. We just used the four saxes and Hawaiian guitar, and then middle part, the saxes played the played 16 bars, and back to the trio.
I saw the harbor lights, they only told me we were parting. The same old harbor lights that once brought you to me. I watched the harbor lights, how could I help if tears were starting? Goodbye to tender nights beside the silvery sea. I long to hold you near and kiss you just once more, but I was on the ship and you were on the shore. Now I know lonely nights, for all the while my heart is whispering some other harbor lights will steal your love.
Sam, you mentioned George T. Simon a little while ago on the program, and he certainly picked on you in print a great deal over the years, but even George Simon had to give the band credit in a number of departments. He said, for example, that it was always a hard-working band, and that although Sammy Kay was a tough taskmaster, the band did always practice to perfection.
Yes, they certainly did. We used to practice when we played theaters. I remember we played the Capitol Theater here, and I remember after... We were doing about five shows a day, and after the fourth show, between the fourth and fifth show, every day we'd be downstairs rehearsing, don't know what. Uh-huh. let's take this arrangement out, let's run it over and see if we can clean it up a little bit, you know?
Another thing that you did was you always paid your musicians and your vocalists well, and they always traveled first class, and I think those were a couple of things that were very important.
Well, I think first class is the name of the game. If you're going to, you know, play... consecutive dates as much as we did, and we traveled extensively during the height of our career. I wanted the band to be always in good shape and ready for the next night.
On those one-night stands, you made a tremendous number of appearances around the Hartford area. I'm sure you remember our old State Theater very well.
I'll never forget it. That was the wildest theater I ever played because we had the good fortune of doing pretty good business there. And they would have some movie. And if the theater would be packed, they'd put the movie on. And then a lot of people would leave, but the next gang would come in and the theater would be filled again. We'd be standing by. We'd have to stand by. He said, all right, get ready. 15 minutes, a new show. And they'd cut the movie right off in the middle and go into the new stage show. Never finished the movie. No.
The movie was just incidental.
Incidental, yeah. But they'd just cut the movie off in the middle and on goes the stage show.
And, of course, you remember Lake Compounds in Bristol. Oh, I'm sure you played there many times.
Many, many times. Those are great memories. Those were great one-nighters we used to play when we traveled a lot.
Another thing that you did whenever you conducted the band through one of these one-night stands, through the dances and so on, the experts say that you set good tempos, you arranged your sets so that there was never a lull in between, and that you exuded great personal charm as a band leader. So there's more great praise.
Would you repeat that once more? Let's have an instant replay on that one. I want to digest that one.
I read a comment, too, that you are a first-generation Czechoslovakian. Is that true?
That is correct.
Yes. And did you take elocution lessons at one point?
Yes, and it makes me think that perhaps if I hadn't, maybe I'd be the Lawrence Welk today instead of Lawrence Welk, you know? Because I'm sure I had as much of an accent as he did.
What about the Sammy Kaye of the 1970s now? We are in your very comfortable office in New York City. What exactly do you do nowadays, Sam?
Well, I'm still playing my share of one-nighters, not as strongly as I used to in the 40s and 50s, but I go out occasionally.
Now, you say your band. Do you have musicians who are doing other things, but you call on them whenever you have a job that you
want
to
fulfill? For instance, it would be uneconomical for me to bring my New York band down, which is
right.
A pretty well-set band that I use here. So on an occasion like this, we have musicians that have played with me every time I play Florida, you see, and I play there quite often. So this group comes back and joins me, and they know my book, you know, as well as anybody. And so those boys will play with me when I'm down in Florida. And the same thing happens. I have a Chicago band that works with me when I play in the Chicago area.
What about the fans of today? What songs do they want to hear by your band?
I would say that 75% of the things that we play are still the typical swing and sway style music. Then we throw in a few, the other 25%, some of the more contemporary things that are popular right now.
Let's talk about some of those. Charlie Chaplin's Smile is one that the band has had some success with.
Yes, that was in one of our recent Decca albums, and that went very well. And then I'll also add that we did a song about 4 years ago, I think it was Charade, and I just can't believe it. The thing was in the top 40s on all the rock and roll stations. Now, you know, I'm not a rock and roll band, and George Simon, I hope he's listening.
He is. He always said that the swing and sway, he said, was a misnomer. The swing part didn't belong there. He said you could sway with the music, all right, but the swing part wasn't there, and here you've made a top 40 hit, which is more than
right.
George Simon has done.
That's exactly right.
Some of the other modern things that you've done, you did Raindrops recently.
Yes, that's the name of one of our very recent albums, well, Whenever Raindrops is popular, and then our latest album was Love Story, called Love Story, and Love Story, of course, is in there.
That's some pretty music, isn't it?
Beautiful. That's a beautiful composition. It's nice to hear music like this written today and to become as popular as that has.
Thank you.
Sammy, I don't think there's much more that you could accomplish in the music business that you haven't already set your sights on and accomplished in the past. And my understanding is that if you decided not to go back to work for the rest of your life, that you would not have to worry about an income.
I wonder if that's true. I've been very fortunate, and I've had good financial advice, and I've had good management, and so I think I'm very lucky at this particular time. But I'm sure not going to give up working.
Jimmy Durante says, I don't need the money, but I need the work, and you're kind of in the same boat.
Exactly. That's a very good saying. Very good saying.
Well, it's nice that you gave so much pleasure to your fans over the years that they were able to give you something in return, security.
They certainly have, and I appreciate it. And also, before we close this up, I sure want to say once again hello to all our friends around the Hartford area, and hope that we'll be playing up there, and I'll have a chance to visit with all of them again soon.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, Sammy. I've enjoyed you so much over the years, and thank you so much for all the time you've given us.
Thank you very much, Arnold.
Our location engineer was Ben Zinkerman, and studio engineer and editor Bob Schirego.